Welcome, everyone. This is your host, Mariana Thomas, with the Mindfully Recharged podcast. In today's episode, I am talking with Christine Handy. She's a mother, best-selling author, breast cancer survivor. She's a motivational speaker, Fox News breast cancer expert, and humanitarian. Christine is on the board of eBeauty. This is a national charity wig exchange program for those who can't afford wigs during their cancer treatment. Christine is also the president of the board of People of Purpose, a nonprofit company in Palm Beach. I am super excited to bring Christine to you. And most importantly, you have to read her book. You will get to know everything about it during the episode. So without further ado, let's get to it. See you there.
Welcome to Mindfully Recharged with Mariana Thomas. In this podcast, Mariana brings you mindful conversations and people that will develop and recharge you from the inside out so that you can increase productivity in your personal and professional life. This is Mindfully Recharged.
Welcome, everyone. And hello, Christine. Welcome to the Mindfully Recharged podcast. I am super excited and honored to have you with us today. How are you, my friend?
Well, how long do we have?
I know.
No, it's a long story, and it started about a decade ago. It's a story of hope and perseverance. So hopefully your listeners will like that.
Absolutely. I cannot wait to begin to talk to you, because when I met you, I was fascinated right away with you, my friend.
And
I knew that I wanted to bring you to the podcast. And that's why I sent you that invitation and you gratefully say yes. So thank you so much. So tell me, where was Christine born? Like, what was that a little girl growing up?
I was born in Chicago, but grew up mostly in St. Louis, Missouri. And then after I was 18 and I went to college, I went to university in Dallas, Texas. And I ended up staying in Dallas for about 23 years, raised my kids there. And now I live in Miami, Florida. So I've moved around a little bit.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And I can't wait to get to, we'll get there, but I can't wait to get to the book, because just the name of the book, just...
Yes. Walk beside me. Thing. Walk beside us. We should all be walking beside each other. That's the truth of the whole story.
It is, isn't it? Yes. So, Christine, tell me more about the time where life changed.
Yes, life really shifted for me about a decade ago. When I was very young, I wanted to become a model. And I did become a model at the age of 11. Even though it really wasn't something that my parents wanted me to do, I had three other sisters at home and, you know, they were busy, and driving me around to casting calls was not something that they were interested in. But ultimately they gave in, and I was a model for about 30 years. And that was my career. And that's really all I knew. And I loved it. I had a really good experience. I worked all over the country and also into Europe. And you know, I worked for a lot of great clients. And that's all I really knew. And I was completely dependent on the external facade and what I look like. And what I mean by that was I really wasn't getting to know myself, what really I liked to do, what were my hobbies, who did I really like to be around. I really just determined my life, my walk in my life, based on my occupation, for one, and also, you know, the type of clients I got and what I looked like. You know, I would go to casting calls, and if my hair color wasn't perfectly blonde, they would say something to my agent and I would get in trouble. So it was a very transactional life. And ultimately, when I was 35, I had a very bad surgery and ended up with 2 blood transfusions. And 6 years later, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And so ultimately, I lost the beauty that I was very dependent on. And I lost my hair and I was 90 pounds and I had a port in my chest and I had scars now all over. And I really couldn't figure out who was I? Because for so long, I was only attracted to the external part of me. That was all I wanted to get to know. And so ultimately, when that came crashing down, because when you build your life on sand, it ultimately crashes down. And when ultimately that came down,
okay, that's a Twitter moment right there, like Oprah say, right? I just got to channel Oprah right now. Let's Twitter that. When you build your life in sand.
On sand,
it's definitely going to crash.
You're going to crumble down. It crumbles around you. If you build your life on sand, it will crumble around you, which ultimately mine did. And it was in the false idols, right, that I adored. It was in the false identity that I adored that ultimately fell apart. It's not sustainable. It never is. But I thought I could keep it that way forever. And so when that facade came falling down very quickly with breast cancer, I had to figure out who I really was inside. And to be totally honest with you, I didn't really want to do that. I didn't want the whole facade to shatter down. I wanted to keep that. And I didn't want to get to know the inside of me, but I was really forced to. And so as I got to know me with the help of many, many women who shored by my side to help me get to that place where I wanted to get to know me, you know, they basically said to me, we will be the hands and the feet of the Lord to help you until you can help yourself. Because at the time,
where did you find these women? Like, who were they?
They were my lifelong friends.
Got it.
Fortunately, I had not built my female friendships on sand. I had built those on concrete. So they were rooted. They were strong. And they weren't false idols. They were, you know, we were meant to be in community with people. We're meant to live in community with people. And these women stood by my side. And they also taught me that, you know, life isn't transactional, that people shouldn't be transactional, and they would never leave my side, which they didn't. And so ultimately, when I started to figure out who I was, I started to realize that life wasn't about, you know, the bag that I could carry or the street address that I lived on or the car I was driving. And that sounds very cliche, right? But it wasn't just not about that. It was also about serving other people. And how could I serve other people? I could use my story of this, you know, false identity to ultimately who I became. And so within storytelling, there's so much power and vulnerability that we can access to the world. And when we do that, other people don't feel so alone. And so what I mean by that is, you know, somebody could go get a COVID shot, right? And they could feel sick. Now, if everybody around them said, the COVID shot was fine for me, I never got sick, you'd think, huh, there's something wrong with me. There's something that is happening to me that didn't happen to anybody else. Yes. Now, that's a tiny example, but if you use that story within cancer or trauma or major illnesses, if people think they're walking through it alone, it's a much more difficult path. But if there's stories or if there's storytelling, then people won't feel so isolated and lonely. And so that's what I decided to do. I decided to use my pain for purpose to help other people. And ultimately, that serving mentality, that serving heart, actually brought me real joy. And so I was happy in my life for as long as I can remember, but I don't remember feeling much joy.
And that's what I want to, I want to go in there, right there. I want to ask you, what was it like to be an international beautiful model? You're still beautiful, Christine. I can't imagine before cancer what you look like.
Yeah.
So what was it like being an international model and then lose your hair and damage to cancer?
Yeah, it was life shattering. But it was also life shattering because my strongholds were in that identity. You know, I knew a lot of other models that worked for me or worked with me that also had that stronghold. But there were a lot of models that, you know, came in and out of the business and they didn't have that stronghold. And so they knew who they were outside of the modeling world. I did not. And so I think that's what really tripped me up, because my identity was solely on that.
The outside.
Yes. That one identity.
So Christine, so would you say that you were living from the outside in?
As clear as day.
Yeah. And you know, what that brings me is to what I teach is to live from the inside out.
It's so different.
Which is completely different. It's just when we have these moments in our lives that wake us up, you know, and we living from the outside in.
Yeah, hopefully.
Really bring us up to the inside.
Yeah. Yeah, those moments are meant to teach, but we have to take the cue. So many people go through trauma and turn into bitterness versus going through trauma and turning it into storytelling and trying to serve other people. There's a very difference, but it's really a choice how we use our pain.
Exactly. Absolutely. I mean, how many people had things happen to them and they go and just harm other people versus adding value?
Right. And what a difference that is, right?
What is the difference, right? That's a huge, huge difference.
Yeah.
So when you talk about what I wanted to do after that was going help other people.
Yes.
You know, was that the reason why you decided to write your story?
It's exactly why I wrote my book. I had a level of intimacy with these women that it didn't just draw other people closer to us. It really changed and permeated in the community around us. And it didn't just affect my life or their life. It affected so many layers of people in the community because they were watching, right? They were watching this level of intimacy and this commitment. And so I thought to myself, well, if this can change community, think about how much it can change a much broader group. And the serving and the sharing is about how you carry each other, right? And not through one season or two seasons, but season after illness or trauma or pain. And when you don't forsake people in that kind of environment, you know, people are watching and they learn. And so I thought, well, if I write a book about this, about women really carrying each other instead of, you know, what we see maybe on TV or in the news about women tearing each other apart, then maybe this can help other people. And it's a bigger platform, right? And so I wrote my book, and ultimately it did change hundreds of thousands of lives, literally. And so my book became a bestseller and now is being made into a film. And I hope it can continue to change other people's lives, because it's such a powerful story about, you know, intimacy and companionship with female friends.
We cannot wait to see that film. We have to definitely let the audience know when that comes out in social media. So what was the initiative for the name? I mean, it kind of makes sense to me when you talk about, you know, the women that were right there with you.
Yeah.
But what made that name happen for you?
Well, I have always walked, you know, through life, literally, physically and emotionally, with my friends. And so even at a young age, when I was modeling, I was always, you know, exercise walking because I was trying to stay thin and fit. And when I was going through chemotherapy, my friends, even when I was the sickest, they would say, okay, come on, let's get up. Let's take a walk around the block. Even if it was like 50 feet in one direction and 50 feet back, it was that walking together metaphorically and physically. And I just said, you know, I have to have walking in the name of this book because it's really so, it embodies this whole story. And so walking beside me is the name of the book, but it's also, you know, metaphorically, it's ultimately what we should all really do with each other is walk beside each other.
Yes. And I love, as I was reading some of the things in the book, I love how each chapter is like each part of what you are living. You know, I saw like holiday and, you know, just like everything with a meaning, you know, every holiday or every event.
Thank you. Well,
it's together.
Yeah. It's a powerful story. I hope I hope some of the viewers have a chance to read it. But it's a privilege to be able to share my story, even the parts of myself that I don't really like. I was very vulnerable in telling the story because, you know, you can't really expect people to read a story about your life if you are saying, oh, well, all of this was so great. Even in illness, everybody stood by me and there were no problems and there was no scandal, so to speak. But that's not true. And so I wrote the parts that, you know, weren't as flattering about myself in the book and weren't necessarily the nicest things about myself. I put it all out there because, you know, you have to, in order to be vulnerable, you have to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. And when I was going through breast cancer, I was given a lot of books, self-help books, religious books, which really helped me. They were very powerful in my life. But there wasn't a fictional depiction of somebody walking through that journey. And I wanted that for other people. I wanted somebody to be able to pick up a book and say, well, this might happen or this might not happen, but this happened. And so maybe I don't feel so isolated in my journey.
And that's what I love about it.
Yeah.
When I pick up the book and I saw the title, then I went inside and looked at every step. I was like, wow, This is incredible. Everyone needs to read this. Other thing I wanted to ask you, Christine, is what was family like at that moment? What was the support from family? We were talking about the friends, right? They came along. They walked right beside you.
Yes.
We went for a walk every single day.
At least a few feet.
Yeah. So how this affected you immediately?
Yeah.
Family.
Well, I think it was really difficult. I mean, I have two sons and they were 11 and 13 years old. And so for them, you know, boys, they don't like to talk much, especially at that age. They're very introverted. And so it was hard for them to emote how they felt about it. But I'll give you one example of how they showed, maybe projected their fear. My young son was in fifth grade at the time, and he came home one day and I had a brunette wig on. Now I've been blonde my whole life, but when you have no hair, you know, you can play around with the wigs. And so I thought, oh, I'm going to get a cute little brunette wig, which I really liked. And he came home from school and it was on my head. And he literally came over to me and he took the wig off and threw it across the room.
Oh,
and
wow.
He didn't say a word, but the message was very loud and clear. He wanted his mom to look like his mom.
Yes.
He didn't want his mom to look different.
How did that make you feel?
Protective of him.
Wow.
I never used that wig again. Very protective of him. And I was so grateful that he had the ability, even in anger, right? Anger is fear. He had the ability to say, not in words, but through action, what he needed.
Did you know what just came to me, Christine? What he said to you was, stop living from the outside in.
Yeah.
Because that wig was a representation of
living
in the outside.
Yeah.
Right? You still wanted to have your hair and you still wanted to look beautiful in the outside.
Yeah. Yep, I sure did. Yep.
And for him, it was like, I want my mom in everything that she represents. And
exactly.
What she represents right now is no hair. And that's fine with me.
Yeah.
What a beautiful thing. What a beautiful message.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Our children can teach us so much, especially in tragedy. Yeah.
That just melts my heart because I do have a daughter.
Yes.
And she is my biggest teacher. I learned so much from her, you know, at this age, and we're still learning from them. I have another question, Christine. You know, I know that your mission now is to help women and to make sure that we are adding value to them. And that is my mission as well. This podcast is called Mindfully Recharged. So I love recharging people with your stories, even when I do a solo podcast. About health, wellness, or whatever it is, it's about recharging people. So the question is, what tips can you give for women who need a self-esteem boost?
Oh, I have great tips.
I can't wait.
I love this topic so much because, you know, if you think about it, My self-esteem was literally at nothing when I was diagnosed with cancer. I didn't believe in myself at all. Like all this facade was all I believed in. And when that's taken away, you have no control over that, right?
Exactly.
And when that's taken away, it's gone. And so I had to really rebuild my self-esteem, and I didn't have a coach. I had friends and I had family, but I was the coach. I had to really search out, how am I going to rebuild myself and ultimately my self-esteem? And so I really started to discern what I said to myself within my own head. So even if I was playing a game of, not during chemo, but even if I was playing a game of tennis, which I have for the past several years, I would think, and I would remind myself, don't call, if I hit a shot into the net, I would say to myself, oh, that was a terrible shot. And I would stop myself and go, well, that's not a very nice thing to say to yourself. And so I would start really listening to the words that I was saying about myself to myself. That's first, because what we think about ourselves is what we become, right? And then secondly, I would start to discern the people around me and what they were talking to me and saying for me. And so if they were advocating for me, I wanted to hear what they were saying for me. And I also wanted to hear what they were saying to me. And if it wasn't in alignment with how I felt about myself or raising my self-esteem, I had to, in a kind way, push those people out of my life gently. And the other thing I started to discern was, what was I watching on TV? What podcasts was I listening to? What music was I listening to? What movies was I watching? Because all of those voices, myself, your peers, your family, your friends, and outside noise, that ultimately dictates your life. And more importantly, your self-esteem.
100%.
And so when you go through that list, and I would recommend people actually writing it down, when you go through that list, you can really shift in your perspective, and your self-esteem can be raised almost immediately once you eliminate the negativity from those other voices, including your own. And so once I started to do that, my self-esteem got it started to get elevated and higher and higher and higher until I finally felt such pride in myself. And it wasn't because of acts. It wasn't because I fought so hard. It wasn't because of my grit and my grace. I wasn't earning my self-love. I just had self-love for myself. We don't have to do there. It's not an activity in order to get grace and self-love. We just have to be who we are, and that's enough. And so when I started to talk to myself that way, it started to even get exponentially greater. And, you know, pride is many things, but pride in yourself is a really healthy way to walk through life. And I talk about that with people who talk about my book, because, you know, you see in the beginning of my book, somebody who's so alone and so lost. And towards the end of my book, I end up physically, almost physically being more alone. Like I moved away.
I'm going to ask you in the beginning of the book.
Yeah.
I need to finish this, but I have something to ask you from that beginning of the book.
Yeah. So ultimately when I was more alone in the end of the book, you know, my friends had said, okay, we've launched you. We're setting you off. When I was in that position, even alone, I felt completely confident versus in the beginning of the book, I felt completely alone inside, but I had all these other people around me.
And so will you say that you stopped listening and you started talking? Because what happens is that when we stop listening to all the voices, now we become a little more silent.
Yes.
Right? And we start talking or saying the words that we need to tell ourselves. You know, I tell my clients, stop listening so much and start talking to yourself. Stop listening to yourself, because all the voices in your head, you know, telling you that you're not so good enough,
right?
You're not worthy or whatever it is.
Right.
If you don't tell yourself enough that you are worthy.
Yeah.
That you are good enough.
Yeah.
That you are beautiful from the inside out. All those things. It's about talking to yourself more than listening to yourself.
Yeah. Self-direction.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that. I absolutely love that. So going back, when you talk about the beginning of the book, and this is strike me, I don't know how far you want to go into this.
Yeah.
But I just had to ask you, when you talk about wanting to kill yourself,
Yeah.
What was that moment like?
You know, it was a complete lack of self-worth. I felt like my friends and my family had given me and had used their resources, right? Their love, their compassion, their empathy enough. And I thought that my tokens of love were already used up. And I knew I was about to go through 28 rounds of chemotherapy and who knew how many surgeries. And I just said to myself, I can't do this alone. And I thought they were going to quit on me because I was quitting on me. So why would anybody else stand by me if I had quit on myself? And so I knew exactly when I was going to take my life. I knew how I was going to take my life. And I was just waiting for my son, my older son, to get home from boarding school to basically tell him, I love you. And not, I wasn't going to tell him I was going to kill myself. But,
I just wanted to say goodbye.
Yeah. Yeah. In a weird way.
In a weird way. Yeah.
In a terrible way. But you know, the other thing about that was my mind was not in the right place. You know, I was 41 years old and somebody had just said to me, you have breast cancer and this is the odds of you surviving that. That's not a normal thing to go through.
Absolutely.
That's a really traumatic thing. And in that process, you're going to lose the only identity that you've ever thought about yourself. Okay. Now that's a double whammy. Mm-hmm. So my brain was like, I have nowhere else to go. I have to quit because I can't take it. And that was obviously a very selfish reaction, but also my mind wasn't in the right place. Again, if I had rooted myself on faith and friendship and community versus fear and that false facade, I wouldn't have been in the position I was in.
And afraid of losing the outside. I think it was that more than losing all the...
Panicked.
All the outside. I'm like, oh my God, I can't live without this.
Because that's what I thought I was.
And this is what was striking about you when I met you. Because the first thing that I noted was your beautiful picture.
Thank you.
And I thought, wow, this woman is so gorgeous. And I said that to you. And you say, yeah, you never know what's behind that, doesn't it?
Isn't that interesting?
Isn't that? And that struck me. And that's when you told me a little bit of the story.
Yeah.
And I recognized you had overcome that.
Yeah.
You know, because we never know what's behind that beautiful picture.
Never know.
Never know. Until you actually get interested about the person.
Yes.
You know, until you actually ask questions, until you actually are intentional with getting to know that person and not just the outside. Because I was attracted to you right away. I was like, what a beautiful picture. But also, I was attracted to your energy.
Thank you.
Go deeper than that. And your aura. Yeah, your aura was so beautiful. I was like, I got it. I have to know this woman.
Thank you.
So that's why I talked to you. And I am so grateful to my intuition, which is one of my superpowers.
Absolutely.
That I always use, and it takes me to the right place.
Good for you.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. That's one thing I have to always be grateful for.
Yes.
And so I was not wrong when I said I wanted to get to know you.
Thank you.
For sure. Yeah. So let's take it to now the business side.
Yes.
Yes. I know you are on the board of directors of two organizations.
Yes.
What drew you to serve in a nonprofit?
Wow.
Because you were a famous model making money internationally, and now you're working in nonprofit.
Well, I'd like to say that I make money in the nonprofit, but I only do it for the service reasons. I am a motivational speaker by trade, and obviously my book is being made into a film. So that's where my salary comes from. But I'm on the board of two nonprofits. One is called eBeauty, which is a wig exchange program for women who cannot afford a wig during treatment. And the other one, I'm the president of the organization called People of Purpose, and we are trying to change the landscape of recidivism in Palm Beach County. So basically, we're trying to help inmates who come out of jail to get jobs, who have, you know, to get, well, most importantly, employment. And so we're trying to change that landscape, and we're doing actually a really good job of doing that. So those are kind of my, those are my passion projects, and that gives me incredible joy to work on.
Oh, but what a way of adding value.
I hope so.
And we have to talk more about that, because I have always been interested about knowing about a nonprofit. I know so many people working on them, but it doesn't mean you want to get involved with everyone, right? So it has to be something that aligns with you. So that brings me to this question, because, you know, health and wellness is something that I have done for so many years. One of the things, right? If you look at my bio, I look like a multi-passionate person.
Right.
And that's true. But health and wellness started when I was 16.
Wow.
And my mother passed away when she was 33 years old. I was 13.
Wow.
So I feel like if she would have taken care of her health a little bit more and listened to the doctors, she probably would still be here. But we don't know, right?
Right.
God has always a plan.
God has a plan.
Yes. But my question to you is, Christine, I know that when you do have cancer, you go through a lot of chemo. And I cannot even imagine the amount that you went through. And I just want to know, how did you go over so much chemo and it still looks so beautiful and like you are recharged? I want to know that.
That's a very generous compliment. Thank you. Chemotherapy, it attacks healthy cells and cancer cells. So unfortunately, you know, I've had a lot of complications to chemo, but I did hire a nutritionist when I was going through chemotherapy, and I started to take a lot of supplements. I think my favorite supplement has been milk thistle. I don't know if you're familiar with that one, but that's a good one. It detoxifies your liver. The other one that's a good breast cancer preventer is D3. And I have a couple oncologists, and they always promote D3. That's a really good one for cancer prevention. I didn't really eat in a different way, I must tell you, because I am allergic to sugar. And so a lot of people say, well, cancer feeds off sugar. And maybe it does. But as a person who's allergic to sugar and doesn't eat sugar, I got cancer. And I had a pretty aggressive form. So, you know, I think in the health and wellness field, a lot of people make a lot of assumptions about how to heal certain ways. And a lot of it is applicable, but some of it's not. And so I try to take everybody's different, right? I try to take what I can tolerate and what I can't tolerate. And I try to add, I've done other things like acupuncture. I've added acupuncture to my life. I add, you know, of course I work out, I exercise a lot. I walk a lot and I take supplements. And I get a lot of vitamin C because I live in Florida. But I think doing whatever you feel is going to contribute to your health and well-being, albeit very different than other people, then that's important for you. What I don't really like is people to make these very global statements about how best to ward off cancer, because I don't think they apply to everybody.
That's super interesting. Yeah, thank you for that answer, Christine, because, you know, my daughter, she just graduated last year as a biochemical engineer.
Oh, wow.
And I always had these discussions with her, you know, about ingredients and things. And one day we were talking about sugar.
Yes.
You know, and I was telling her as a mom,
yeah,
I was telling something to your kids, don't do this and don't do that. Sure. And I told her, hey, stop eating so much sugar. And she said, I remember clearly, she said to me, Mom, sugar is not bad. It's how much you take. You got to have a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
She said
I agree.
That to me. And you know what? It's true. I mean, what you just say, someone who is allergic to sugar, and I hear this all the time, cancer loves sugar.
Right.
But you never eat sugar. And yes, you got it.
And listen, I'm not a physician, and I'm sure cancer, you know, I'm sure sugar does. Well, I'm not sure because I'm not a doctor, but maybe it does feed cancer. I don't know. But I don't think that blanket statement applies to everybody. Like I said, I can't even eat it. And so it doesn't apply to me. I think a lot of times those are scare tactics. And I don't really like scare tactics. I think every, like your daughter said, everything in moderation is what is more important. You know, if you completely take something out of your life just because you're afraid of getting something, it's never going to stay. It's not going to stick.
And also just to treat the person, right? Not the whole entire world, because exactly. Not everyone react to things the same way.
Fortunately, we're all completely different and we're made perfectly different. So everything doesn't always apply to everybody.
We are perfectly imperfect.
We are perfectly imperfect. Yes,
that's right. Well, what an amazing conversation today, Christine. You have been a joy. I just want you to remind the audience the name of the book, and also I want you to tell the audience one thing that you want to them to remember.
Yes,
about mindfully recharging themselves when they go through something like cancer. And surviving.
My book is called Walk Beside Me by Christine Handy, and the one tip I can give you is to remember that when you're going through a difficult health and well, you know, a difficult illness, it is about you. And don't worry so much about other people at the time. It's what matters is you taking care of yourself first. And it's hard for us women to do that. It's hard for us to put the mask on first, but it's critical. If we don't do that, we're not going to be around to take care of other people. So take care of yourself. It's not selfish. It's self-love.
I am clapping over here because that is what I preach to my clients.
So true.
Self-care is not selfish.
It's not.
Okay? Make the time to put yourself first.
Yes.
That is exactly what I preach. So thank you so much. And you guys, you know, the link to the book will be on the show notes. I'm going to link that in there so you guys can make sure you buy this amazing story. You do not want to miss this story. So you can read this. You know, it's summer is coming. It's spring. It's getting beautiful up there. So when you're sitting outside, you can be reading this amazing story that not only is going to inspire you, but you're probably going to inspire other people with it. So it's not just about buying the book, but it's about buying inspiration and true story.
Yes.
And the book is not only the thing that is coming up, but the film. So
we
got to make some noise when that happens. And with that, my friend, I thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for being here with us on the Mindfully Recharged podcast. And to you guys, I'll see you next time on the next episode. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening, everyone. And don't forget to go to the show notes and click to download your free, mindful, and energetic living guide. Also, don't forget to share this podcast with your friends, your families, and everyone up there. I want to get this up there to everyone. So thank you for your support, and I'll see you next week.